it's Phil. It's part two of episode 326 of Phil Hewlett and Friends. So glad you tuned in. Don't forget to subscribe to the program. It's very easy. Go to our website, philhewlettandfriends.com. You'll see on the right column a nice green. There's nothing green on the site except for this button. It's a green button that says subscribe.
Can't miss it.
When you click on that, it drops down various options for you. There's the iTunes option and the Google Play, and if you have an Android, then
every option imaginable.
If you've got an Android and you already have some kind of podcast app installed on your phone, you click on that, it'll ask you which one you want to use. And so it is so easy.
So easy.
Subscribe to the show so you never miss an episode. You don't even have to think about it. And when you feel like listening, you can listen. That's the magic of podcasts. It really is.
You've made it so easy for everybody.
It's so easy. That voice you're listening to is our producer and the host of her own podcast, Sweet Life, Brooke Peterson.
Hello.
Also here with me today is a recovering cosplay dude, and now he dabbles with furry creatures that he has to stick his hands way up into their nether regions.
All the way up.
To operate. He's now a puppeteer in training, Mike Templeton.
Also a host of my own show.
That's right. It's called The Retro Convo.
There you go.
And nice. You could subscribe to both of those podcasts. And intern Ricky is here, and I understand he has a show. But we haven't, for some reason, been able to get the name of the show.
I'm not allowed to say it, apparently. Not at that level yet.
Word count. Everybody shops online. I shop online. You shop online. You're probably shopping online while you're listening to my voice. What's the matter with you? Pay attention. But the difference is, when I shop online, I make money. How is that possible? It is possible every day of the week with Ebates. Ebates partners with just about every online retailer, the retailers you love. And if you're an Ebates member, which is free, by the way, you get 5, 10, 15, sometimes 20% cash back from all of your purchases. So I'm getting money back every day of the week because I'm shopping online every day of the week, it seems. And so why don't you do this, too? In fact, I'll make it real easy for you. You go to the sponsor page at philhewlettandfriends.com, click on the Ebates button, and when you sign up from there, this won't happen anywhere else. You sign up there, Ebates will give you a $10 bonus instantly. How about that? So I told you it was free to sign up. They'll pay you to sign up if you sign up on our sponsor page. So get money back, maybe hundreds of dollars, depending on how active you are shopping online with Ebates. All right, we'll get things rolling here because we have so much to talk about. In just a few minutes, we'll have Gary Warner on, our travel dude, and he's going to take us literally to Game of Thrones.
I'm excited. To Westeros.
That's going
to
be cool.
Yeah, well, he knows where that is, he's going to get you there on a dime. Brooke, why don't we start with you? Because growing up, we were taught, you know, if you want good grades from your teacher, you want to be something like a teacher's pet, then you should bring an apple or some kind of gift for your teacher every day, and the teacher will...
What if the teachers don't deserve it, Phil?
Well, you just
what if
shouldn't.
Bad teachers.
You should just sit there and take it.
I had some of the worst teachers. Ricky and I went to high school together. Oh, we had some of the worst teachers.
Well, what did you guys do? Did you do what this person did in Australia, which was to leave physical representations of how she felt about her teachers, which is in the form of a big pile of poo?
Whoa.
I mean, once?
Because she says the teachers
are... It ran through my head a couple times.
Yeah.
Because the teachers are crap, they say.
And how often, where's this poo coming from?
The girl.
Oh, my God.
It's a girl's school. It's actually really funny. It's a girl's school. It's supposed to be like this prestigious, really well-known, highly respected private girl's school in Australia, in Victoria. Yeah. And
turns out the school
stinks. But apparently,
stinks.
Yeah.
That's crazy, mate.
But the students say that the teachers are absolutely horrible, and that there's one that they were talking about where he'll come in and bring his earphones, give them a video, and say, read the book, and or watch his videos while he says to them, read a book and answer the questions in the back. And somehow the only reason they are as good as they are is because the students are actually really good students and work really hard. So they're like, no, these are our teachers. They are piles of bleep.
So where's this poo being deposited?
Bathrooms and around the sink. Sink and bath. Floor and sink in the bathroom.
Oh, but so not like...
But there's been several.
Not on the desk where one would place an apple.
Okay, I'm going to deep dive into this for a second.
Please don't deep dive into the poo,
are they
please.
Like in piles, in bags? Are they like painting the walls with it?
Hmm.
I mean, there's different levels of aggression here.
I do think they're piles.
Okay.
Get back to me in a second.
Okay.
I'll skim this. But yeah, so
I'm getting flashbacks of my horrible teacher.
It's
now.
A pretty graphic protest of their education.
All right. Now, speaking of graphic, this is not a protest, but it is an example of affection and how far you can take that sort of thing. And it is fairly graphic. And in fact, we're not going to play it because it'll make all of us uncomfortable. But you can dig it up yourself and watch it if you have the time. But tell us about this. What do you call them? A tantric couple?
It's a couple, and they practice the tantric arts in Texas. And they claim that they can each have 18-hour orgasms just by, like, hugging and looking at a tree.
Wouldn't that kill you?
And listening to the rain. Do you work?
Wouldn't you get brain damage?
Yeah.
Or a vaso reaction and pass out, right? I mean, it's like the blood rushing to the brain. I mean, it's like a stroke, a mini stroke. Maybe it's a massive stroke.
I'm kind of convinced that their quote unquote orgasm is not what we all think, because that's just impossible. It's impossible. It's completely impractical, and kind of ruins my schedule.
Well, maybe
time management.
What they're pointing out, and if you just open your mind a little bit and think outside of the box, maybe we hold our orgasm standard a little too high, and that perhaps we're there a little sooner than what we've come to expect.
Maybe. They say they can teach people. They teach classes, and they say they have had orgasms with their friends listening to thunder and seeing lightning bolts outside. I mean, it's pretty out there.
Wow.
Mm. Would you even want that? Would you want an 18-hour orgasm, honestly?
No, I don't have 18 hours for anything.
Right? That's what I'm saying.
Just sounds painful to me.
But I mean,
I'm not even awake for 18 hours. it's too much energy.
If I think back, like some of the longest sexual experiences that I've ever had. Uh-huh. I mean, it's like, come on. We're not doing anything for the next 18 hours after that.
Right.
So going 18 hours at that kind of a, you're giving up a lot when you're hitting that climactic moment.
That's true. Can I give a quote here from this person?
Sure.
His name is Scott. It says, sometimes our orgasms can be overwhelming, but most of the time we're fully functional during a prolonged orgasmic state and can adjust the intensity. We can sense the powers of the earth and feel like gods.
Oh. Like gods. It's almost poetic, like they're doing Shakespeare, right? We could feel like gods.
Says she has 8 or 9 hour orgasms regularly every month. And whatever.
They're lying.
They're lying. Liars.
That has to just not
Why
be
do
true.
They have to lie so much?
Let's get a doctor on the phone. It's not even possible. Right. Okay. A sneeze is I was always told a sneeze is like an orgasm.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Right.
I mean, it works out your core.
You sure? Yeah. I haven't sneezed yet since I got back from the hospital.
Look at the light. Look at the light. Yeah. Don't let that happen.
Just look up and say peanut butter.
Hey, we have some breaking news out of San Diego and the E3.
Yeah.
And here with that news is our reporter who's, not on the scene. He's here. Mike Templeton.
So breaking right now, the Hollywood Reporter is kind of hinting heavily that Ben Affleck might not be Batman now. So he's...
Has he worn out his welcome?
He's a bad Batman.
He has not been shy about his disdain for this property. Since the horrible reviews for Batman v Superman last year, he is not so shy.
Okay, so as a fan, I take it you're a fan. Do you care if he's Batman or not?
I actually like him as Batman. I have major problems with all of those movies. Wonder Woman being the exception. That was fantastic.
Badass.
That was super badass. But him as Batman was actually not one of the bad parts of the movie.
So we're not crying. We're not crying. We're not upset.
I'm not upset. Mostly because I knew this was going to happen. Like, you can see a lot of fun. Like, he was a meme for a while with sad Ben Affleck. And it was all him reacting to reviews of the movie. So when DC was really kind of moving forward with their Batman movie, their solo Batman movie, he was originally set up to direct it, write it, and star in it.
Yeah.
And then it's slowly just kind of, hey, he's not directing it anymore. Now we have Matt Reeves He's not writing it anymore. Now they're bringing in two other writers. And now, yeah, they're alleging that he's probably going to drop out.
Was what's his name? Chris Bale?
Christian Bale, yeah.
Christian Bale. Was he the only guy that did multiple stints?
Michael Keaton was twice.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was in the original and Returns.
Yeah.
And Val Kilmer and my favorite, George Clooney.
No.
Batman and Robin, I swear, is one of the best Batman movies.
Yeah, I think almost everybody disagrees.
This is coming from a certified Batmanologist, okay?
Okay. Certified.
Certified.
They have that certification.
They do. I'm a certified Ninja Turtle expert and a Batmanologist.
All right, here's something you might be into as well. You might have been among the 16 million people who watched Game of Thrones, the season premiere. What is this? The seventh season on HBO. Honestly, I haven't seen a single episode, but I've seen clips, and it sure is the show set in a picturesque part of the world. How about we bring in our travel guy, Gary Warner? Hey, Gary, do you watch Game of Thrones?
You know, I'm a latecomer to it, Phil, but yes, I do watch it. I watched both the end of last season and the beginning of the new season back-to-back a couple days ago.
Now, when you watch this, do you think, hey, I know where that is? And so let me ask you, can we or should we travel to the locations where the story takes place?
Well, that's what's kind of interesting. It depends on how adventurous you are, I guess. The main place that Game of Thrones is filmed is in Northern Ireland, outside of Belfast. Now, right now, for the most part, Northern Ireland is very peaceful. But as everyone knows, there was a long period with the troubles between the Catholics and the Protestants. But it's often a place that the British government will pay handsomely for those.
All right. See, the Game of Thrones dragon has gotten him.
The connection can't be too good in Westeros.
Well, that's fine.
Reboot.
So, Mike, you do watch Game of Thrones regularly?
I do, yeah.
Have you watched every episode of every season?
Yeah, absolutely. I use my parents' HBO Go right now to get those episodes. But
heck yeah.
Yeah, right?
But dude, you're so like good. In your 30s.
Yeah, and they use my Netflix account.
Oh, okay.
It's a trade. It's an even trade.
Yeah, all right.
But no, it's I love Game of Thrones so much, and it's fun. Because it takes a lot of the normal fantasy conventions and just kind of twists it on its head. It's like it's Harry Potter for adults,
yeah,
but with politics
and politics and some softcore porn too, right?
Yeah, thankfully that's kind of been dialed down in the last couple seasons. The fan outrage has kind of been like, hey, less sex position, like because that was the thing. They would use sex as a storytelling element,
yeah,
and two characters would be having sex on screen while expositing,
yeah.
And the character expositing typically wasn't having sex. It was just the two characters in the background. So you had something to look at while you were listening to the boring information.
Right.
So they've kind of done away with that now.
Well, that might be a formula as to how to reel in the fanboys.
I mean, it definitely worked. And now people are hooked. And now it's like, okay, cool. We can move past that.
Yeah. And just like guys, and Brooke, you know all about this. You mm-hmm. know, once you get a little action, then, you know, you move on. You get your action elsewhere, but you still, you know, you keep that former flame in the friend zone, if you can, because there's a chance.
Like on standby, just in case?
Just in case for that
just in case.
That 2 a.m. call.
Are we talking about a booty call?
just for old times.
Wow. You almost knocked out Mike with that. You almost killed Mike.
Oh my god! I laughed so hard. That was
yes.
That was never, a creative segue.
That never
segue.
Happens, does it?
That was a creative segue.
I live in the friend zone. Are you kidding me? It's no. horrible.
All right. So we may never find out what's happening with Gary. If he does click in, we'll be fine because we're not going to hear from the Dino Dig for another 15 minutes. So we've got that kind of room to try to. Oh. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Warren here.
All right. Where'd you go? Now you sound like you're inside a meat locker.
Gary, are you at the wall now?
I found the DSL spot. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. That's a DSL. My goodness, that's what Grandma uses.
I know. Well, I was using Wi-Fi.
Yeah. All right.
There we go.
Now we're all set. Now you're out of the meat locker and ready to go. So you were talking about Belfast and castles.
I'll make this fast since I ate up a bunch of your time there. But basically, like many shows, it started out with them not wanting to spend a whole lot of money. So they filmed mostly in Belfast and some down in Malta, which is an island that has a lot of British influence also in the middle of the Mediterranean for the southern kingdoms. Now, as things got a little bit more, you know, the things started rolling, they were going to Dubrovnik in Croatia. And that's where you see most of the settings King's Landing, the main spot. Now, obviously, they use a lot of CGI, you know, the computer generated images to create, you know, the churches and other stately buildings. But that's when you're looking out over all those red roofs, and there's a wall along the sea. That's Dubrovnik in Croatia. It's a beautiful spot and very safe to go to. And then they were down in Morocco for a while, and then Morocco got a little. And so they're out of Morocco, and now that they're such a big deal, they get to go to Spain.
Ooh,
nice. So Spain is where most of the southern kingdoms are shot now. Iceland is where most of the northern Winterfell and places like that are shot. And those are all fantastic spots to go visit, and there are tours that are out there. You can go online, and you can even find self-directed tours in which you fly into London, and then for about $2,000, you can go to each of the sets around Europe, Croatia, Morocco, you know, Northern Ireland, all that, and see whatever you want to see.
Including Malta, huh? Because typically Malta's going to add some extra cash to your trip anytime you
go
there, right?
You know, yes, it does. But at the same time, there are low-cost airlines that fly to Malta, and particularly if you go a little bit off-season, you know. That's the other thing. One of the reasons that they stopped filming so much in Iceland and started doing it more in back down in Belfast was for these huge battle scenes, the days were just too short, you know, because they were mostly filming in the winter to make it wintry looking. And as you probably know, if you get up in Alaska or something like that, you got about 5-6 hours of sunshine out there.
Yeah, that's right. And but you do get the opposite later, but you don't have the snowy, icy look.
That's right. And, you know, what's really neat is that for the most part, they've filmed everything in this fairly tight area of Europe. They did a little bit of secondary shooting up around Calgary in Canada, but not with the characters, just sort of, you know, because they want different landscapes and things like that. But you really get that warm, sensual, you know, Southern European feel in places like Spain, where they're in Seville and Cordoba. Those are the main two cities that they filmed at, which were supposedly inspirations for the book, by the way, Seville and Cordoba.
Yeah.
So, and then the only other thing I would recommend is, as a student of history, you know, you have the Lassiters and the Starks. That's the two big families in this thing.
Yes.
Well, there was a little thing called the War of the Roses between the Lancasters and the Yorks. And a lot of the themes are come from that. And so you can go to, you know, cities like York, which is on the way from London to Belfast. So you can see the inspiration for this stuff, and you can also see the sets.
Yeah. Here's a little tidbit, because I know you like tidbits. When Game of Thrones premiered for the seventh season on premiere night, apparently fans didn't have time for anything else, including porn. The folks who analyze porn traffic to the website Pornhub declared that during the Game of Thrones season 7 premiere on Sunday, July 16th, across the United States, they saw website traffic fall by almost 5% while the show was airing.
That's because they have full nudity on, you know, on HBO. Yeah. As anybody who's been watching this show knows, there's been some great scenes for boys and girls.
Oh.
That's a very equal opportunity. But
there's the graph,
so,
right there.
You know, oh,
so
there's, gosh.
Your
5, wow.
There's your 5%, you know, I guess. Those that are, you know, they'd rather see one of the famous actresses in the buff than, you know,
it's
whatever.
Just
whatever.
Bodies. I don't get it.
It's just bodies, yeah.
We want to see more. And then after we see those, then we want to see another couple or three.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, that's one of the things you always get on something like HBO and these main cable shows. They have to show you that they're not, you know, broadcast. So there's always nudity. There's a lot of gore.
Yeah.
You know, the premiere this time had a lot of stuff about bathroom stuff, which I could have done without. But they had to show me that
was a great scene,
this.
Though. That was such. Yeah. That was, it went on a little too long, but the music is good.
It was. It was. And he's a great character. Yeah. It's a really fascinating show. It's one of these things where I didn't research all the way back. I kind of went to friends and said, just tell me what's happened the last two seasons. I don't want the big, long list of all the characters who disappeared. LA Times.
Oh, you're missing out, though.
I know. Well, at some point, I will go back. But I have a very limited amount of time for these serial shows. And I'm a Mr. Robot guy. So
I got to get on that show.
I can't get into that.
Mr. Robot.
Season, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Mr. Robot season one is some of the best television ever. Season two, but season three, it's coming up. And you know what? A lot of what was in season one is prescient to what's going on right now with the hacking and everything like that in our kitchen. Yeah. So.
Gary, one of my favorite places in Game of Thrones is Dorne,
right,
which we visited at the end of the last season. And where is that in the world?
Dorne, I believe, is in Morocco. Hold on a minute. Let me get to my list here.
And it's one of the only places you won't want to visit because
I want to visit, but not if it's in Morocco.
It's Spain.
It is Spain. Oh, see,
now you can go.
I'm going to Dorne.
Seville is both Dorne and Sunspear.
Oh, I've heard Seville is gorgeous. Yeah.
And then over in Cordoba is the Long Bridge of Volantis. So, you know, you can just go down there and
So, Gary, you say we can pull off this trip for like $2,000 to $3,000.
Well, if you wanted to see everything, you know, you could go to $2,000 to $3,000. If you just wanted to go to like Belfast and Spain, you know, because mostly the last couple of seasons have been mostly in Spain.
Yeah.
You could do that for much cheaper, obviously.
Yeah. All right, good. Well, thanks for rebooting and bringing us all the information.
Yeah.
And
we found out.
Yep. No worries. We found out more about you than we ever thought we did.
I'm standing here in my son's bedroom right now because he has the best DSL.
Oh.
You know, I was trying to use Wi-Fi and it just wasn't clicking.
Well, congratulate him for me. Thank you.
I will.
All right, Gary, we'll talk to you next time.
Bye, Gary.
Take care, man.
All right, you too. All right, so Brooke, here's what you don't understand, apparently, about guys.
There's so much. Where do you start?
No.
I'll take whatever.
Okay. So for guys, it's no matter when it happens, it's always a thrill to see some form of nudity.
Boobs.
Okay?
Like the boobs.
Anything. Just like a little piece. And so so here's the thing. I've decided that in life, men live by a naked scale, and ladies don't know that this scale exists. It's all percentages. Now, when you're dressed, you know, fully clothed, let's say you're in you're Natalie attired in a pantsuit, okay?
Uh-huh.
And all you're showing is your hands,
right?
You know, and maybe a little bit of your neck, okay? Uh-huh. So that's like that's like 0% nudity, right? But if you go to a blouse with a little, you know, what do they call that? Décolletage, right? And you see that little, that crevasse that happens between your two mammalian protuberances. That's like 5% right there. That's like 5% naked. Just that little crevasse, right? Okay. Uh-huh. You go up to shorts and we're seeing between the knee and like well up the thigh, you've just upped the ante to maybe, you know, like, because legs, I mean, that's the highway right there.
It's true.
And so you've added like 10, maybe 15%. So you've got the neckline and the legs, and now you're up to like 20, 25% naked.
Now, is it quality or quantity? Because even though it's 5%, that's a pretty like, you know, erotic 5%. So is it actually like 55%? Erotic?
No. It's just, it's there. And so it's just all on a percentage, and it's more or less equal. All right?
I'm a quality.
Yeah. All right? So now you start adding things because the fashion people, they make all these peekaboo type things.
Yeah.
And ladies, you know, look, you're kidding yourself when you say, you know, come on, guys, just because I'm wearing this. We live in a civilized world. There are laws, and men would all be in jail if we didn't fight back our primal urges.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So just kind of understand what you're doing to us. I mean, it really is not fair. Because
you love it.
Because the guys who aren't strong enough to curtail their urges do end up in jail, and they do end up hurting women.
Well, they're, mentally.
Yeah, well, and just not strong enough. Let's put it that way. All right? But every guy is fighting these urges when the women walk in and they've got some form of peekaboo going on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's side boob action. Boy, you get side boob. That just jumped you up 25% right now. those shorts go up and show a little cheek, you know.
Oh, gosh.
That's another 25%.
You're like at 90% nudity if you're
You go
there.
To the beach and, you know, just about anything you're wearing at the beach, bikini or one piece, whatever. But, you know, if it's
a
bikini.
How do guys stand it at the beach?
No, then? It's impossible because you're in the mid to high 90s at the beach, percentage-wise, naked. And so all that's left is 100% naked. And so that's the goal. So anytime you do see 100% naked, you know, so let's say there's a...
That was like the ding, 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 ding.
You're watching Game of Thrones and all of a sudden the girls come out. You know, that's like just by itself, that's 50%.
Okay.
Right? Like both of them at the same time, that's 50%. I mean, one alone is probably like 35%. It's not just half and it's not 25%.
I'm okay with like a 70% though. Like I worked.
That's the thing. There's an optimal number. Like where's too much is just too much, but not enough is not quite.
No, I'm not saying the percentages are cut and dry. I'm not saying it's cut and dry because different guys focus. Some guys are, you know, they like the boobs. Some guys like the butt better. And other guys are, you know. Yeah. But it's all percentages for guys. Like there's a percentage of nakedness that you are presenting to us, and then we have to deal with that. Because the only...
So what would you suggest?
The only thing left for us in that moment is, man, what would 100% look like? And so every woman a guy meets, there's a momentarily conscious or subconscious thought that, man, what would she look like naked?
Okay.
And that happens in every case. And so when women say don't objectify us, I mean, it's our DNA to objectify women.
And we, it's like, do we overcome that?
Well, see, and in a civilized society in which we live, it's not conducive to be a man. And so that's what men have to fight on a daily basis, to live in civil life with women. It is. It is.
It's so hard.
But the sooner women realize that, the quicker they'll realize what damn teases they are.
I mean, we're technically a minority now. 51% of the world is female. The future is female.
Yeah.
Well, that's thanks to China.
Yeah, but if you're the five or six guys left when the future is female, then just think how difficult that's going to be.
Yeah.
You're like, man.
Oh, man.
Right.
Poor things. You guys. A big group hug.
Oh, don't do that. Because now you're dealing with something else that we have to deal with.
More tease right there.
I think I felt something pressing up against
me. Can't win.
No. All right. Among the many scholarly publications stacked on my coffee table is one called Peer J. And while thumbing through the pages of said scholarly publication, the headline of a study caught my eye. It said, investigating the running abilities of Tyrannosaurus rex using stress-constrained multibody dynamic analysis. Wow, I thought. Stress-contained multibody dynamic analysis. I'm all about that. So I dug deeper into what I discovered, and what I discovered, I should say, is a bunch of paleontologists concluded that the fierce, toothy predator with freakishly short arms and oversized head, who we've affectionately come to know as T-Rex, couldn't outrun a field mouse, let alone a human, back in the day when Raquel Welch and others walked among the dinosaurs. Now, let's learn more about this. Joining us is one of the scientists behind this study. He's a professor of paleontology and natural science. He's thigh-deep in a fossil dig as we speak with him. Dr. Phil Manning, welcome, sir.
Greetings. How are you, sir?
I'm even better now that you're here, sir.
Not going to lie, I was excited for this interview.
Now, where exactly are you and what are you digging up?
We are just at the edge of the world in the middle of nowhere. And we're in a slice of time called the Jurassic period, which most people know thanks to Mr. Spielberg. But this particular slice is the Morrison Formation, and we have some beautiful dinosaur bones. Nay, they are almost lickable of these huge titans from the Jurassic period.
So I love that.
We've been here 2 months now and going slightly stir crazy here. Speaking to humans is really nice.
Oh, well,
you can speak to me all day.
It's an honor. And so this is in Wyoming, is it?
It's we're in Wyoming, yes, at a secret location not to be revealed.
I didn't
know. So it's rather hush hush. So don't tell anyone, all right?
All right, good. So in other words, you don't have licenses or permits to dig any of this up.
Well, believe it or not, yes, we are very licensed. That's one of those things. Licensed to thrill.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that dinosaurs do to people.
Wow. And, yes, especially if
and
you're
it,
out there.
As with you.
If you're out there licking bones, I mean, please. Now,
and there's a lot of bones in the Morrison Formation. I'm looking at the list of things in there. Don't see my favorite dinosaur, but there are a lot of
Which one ones. Is that?
My favorite is an Ankylosaurus.
And have you dug one of those yet?
There are some. They belong to a beautifully named group, the Thyreophorans, literally meaning shield bearers.
That's why I love them. Shielded bears.
And shielded bears, yes. That's a dodgy one if you meet one of those.
Yeah.
But
With a giant-ass club on its tail.
We do find the ancestors of these creatures within the Morrison. This is their sort of evolutionary route begins here as they flourish into the Cretaceous, where they become dominant at the end of the Cretaceous period, just alongside, of course, the good old famous Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yes, and I want to find out about your study there. What did you set out when you began this study, and what were you testing, and did you have a conclusion in mind when you started, or was this all a surprise to you?
Well, as you know, all scientists will never start out a study with a conclusion in mind, because that'll make them a bad scientist.
Never.
But what we try to do, we construct an experiment, test it, validate it, and come up with some evidence which we then interpret, and it becomes glorious science in the end. And for us, we were interested in what was the locomotor ability of T-Rex. We'd worked on this before, and we'd come across multiple studies suggesting it was a sort of slothful leviathan through to rather speedy predator. But none of these studies had ever really taken into account the strength of bone during locomotion, which is actually very tough mathematics to resolve. So that's when we realized why no one had done it before, because it's hard.
Yeah, well, naturally, you went to that old fallback process of stress-constrained multi-body dynamic analysis. Of course you did. Now, why don't you explain to our audience what that is and why you chose it? Because, of course, I know what it is.
Well, what it is precisely is that we can get a computer to numerically work out what's happening in terms of bone strength during actual locomotion. So when you put your foot down on the ground, how that force is translated through the body. Now, my colleague, Dr. Bill Sellers, who has the brain slightly larger than a small planetoid, he was able to come up with some software which tested this and was able to sort of literally in vivo, as it were, albeit in silicon vivo, so it was literally in a virtual environment, reconstruct T-Rex sprinting around the place, and it couldn't sprint. And that was the thing that was rather devastating, because everyone wants a large, slobbering, big-headed predator running them down. If you met my brother, you'd have probably come across that. But the thing is with this, it's still moving pretty quickly. It's speed walking. So I think you'd still be hard-pushed to outrun it.
Oh.
So remember
because of the stride, right? What is it, a 30-foot stride?
Exactly.
Yes. But this does change the perception of the persona of the T-Rex. I mean, apex predator can eat what it wants, when it wants, but quite possibly it was the laughingstock of the dino gang as they outran it and said, "Hey, over here, T-Rex, I'm over here."
Yeah, if you look at most predators on the planet today, the actual prey are pretty good at running away from predators. Lions very often don't get a successful kill. And you're hearing our field team in the background there talking.
Ooh,
on the...
Sound like they found on the scene.
Yeah, they have. Shh, don't tell anyone.
Oh.
No, we know too much.
Did we lose him?
I'm amazed he was as clear as he was for as long as he was.
Did he fall into a pit?
It reminds me a lot of, have you ever watched, not that Jurassic Park is like the benchmark for dino science, but a lot of the behind the scenes when they built the animatronic for the T-Rex,
yeah,
couldn't move. a lot.
Okay.
Did you fall into a pit, Dr. Manning?
No, there was a rip in the space-time continuum.
That's why you don't mess with the Morse information.
Are we talking about a hobbled, inconsequential beast who can't grab things with his tiny arms, and when bent over to chew on some grass, it would fall over from the weight of its enormous head?
Well, are you talking about me or the T-Rex? I think the thing is, the T-Rex was an astoundingly successful predator. There is no doubt about that. We find the teeth of T-Rex embedded in healed bone in their prey. So that means they had a good snap at some prey that got away. We often find their shed teeth associated with the plant-eating dinosaurs, hadrosaurs and ceratopsians. So they clearly were successful to a point. And they probably run as fast as they needed to. And to be quite honest, when you look at something like Triceratops, they weren't exactly graceful. And they evolved those huge horns to protect themselves from something. And it wasn't from each other. It was basically predators such as T-Rex. They were the apex predator of the time, would have certainly taken chunks and hunks out of the back of these creatures and been astoundingly successful predators.
Yeah, I'm not crying for T-Rex. I'm pretty sure he did all right.
I actually wasn't aware that we went back to T-Rex being a predator. I thought it was still a kind of scavenger. I thought that's
I think there was a very small camp of folks who did change their mind quite rapidly when there was that horrible bit of evidence that slayed that wonderful idea in terms of having healed bone with bite marks of T-Rex. So that tells us there was predation going on.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, you know, I haven't been dived in a few days, but if there's a free meal going, we do like grabbing a quick free meal.
I'm
sure T-Rex would have done that.
Now, the nature of science is that you never stop trying to unprove what has been theorized. And so I wonder, with your paleontological peers out there, are they all universally happy with this new picture of T-Rex, or is there a camp out there that says, no, we're going to do our own study and bring a T-Rex back to the track meet?
I really hope there's someone out there who's a miserable toad who thinks we're completely wrong, because that's science. I think it's always good to instill feeling about science. And I'll be quite honest, if we all agreed with each other, wouldn't it be boring?
Of course. Totally.
So, you know, so I think that the scientific debate will continue. Hmm. But what's more important is the...
What's more important?
Oh, he tore the space-time continuum again.
Is he back?
The key to human existence.
I want to find out.
One last question for him.
No, so do I.
Oh, you're back. There we go.
Go, Mike, jump on.
You said what's most important, and then you fell into the pit again.
I said 42, and you all missed it. You know.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
The most important thing really is that it's the scientific method that's being developed further and further and refined. It's not just applicable to dinosaurs, it's applicable to us. We can understand something about us humans and how we locomote and how our bones behave whilst we play with dinosaurs. We love playing with dinosaurs.
Yes.
We also like applying the science we generate into the 21st century. And for me, that's what makes this so exciting.
Oh, my gosh. All right, I'm going to ask you one more question and let you go, because I know you have more digging and licking to do. But what's...
Yes. Hello.
What's next for you and your team now that you've destroyed the reputation of one of the most feared creatures of all time?
Yes, and find the next one, I suppose. No, I'm dead.
Oh, cut off. No, we got him.
Radiation light source.
Yes.
You got me?
We have you. What's next for your team?
I'm working at the Stanford Synchrotron in a week's time. I've been out here for 8 weeks now. I'm kind of tired. I need to see people again. So we're going to go from low-tech to high-tech, where we're using some of the brightest light in the universe to study dinosaur bones and the chemistry of bone. And we do that at the Stanford Synchrotron up by Stanford University.
Right. Do they pass out free sunblock while you're there?
Well, you really don't want to get in the way of these particular x-rays that we use, but it helps us unpick this wonderful story of life on Earth. Yeah. And for me, it's some of the funnest stuff we do is A, in the field, but B, at labs like at the Stanford Synchrotron. So we have great fun there.
Amazing to speak with you. We're so thrilled that there are smart guys like you and your colleagues walking around the planet. Otherwise, we'd all be saying things like, So thank you, sir, and continued good luck to you. And we'll post a link to the study so people can read that.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for letting me get in my soapbox. Much appreciated.
Yes, and maybe you'll enjoy some soap in a day or two. All right.
Thanks.
Good day,
take
sir.
Care.
All right. There you go. Wow.
He had a nice voice.
You like that?
I love British accents.
There's a lot of cool
love them.
Cool dinosaurs that they have in that Morrison, though. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm nerding out. I like dinosaurs.
See, you kind of know where he is. He didn't want people to know he was there.
I knew exactly where it
you
was.
You geolocated him.
As soon as
you
said Wyoming, I'm like, I know where he is. Because T-Rex is like, T-Rex is almost purely an American dinosaur. I mean, they didn't have America back in those days, but
right. Yeah.
It's primarily found in North America and really only in Wyoming and like parts of Montana.
Mm.
So, process of elimination.
We can be so proud.
Wow. Hey, a woman was who introduced herself as to police as the Million Dollar Ho.
Oh.
Wow.
Was just arrested in a prostitution ring in Florida.
Oh, Florida.
This is breaking news. It just happened. She's 49. She approached an undercover officer in a parking lot and asked if he wanted a date.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The officer, she then sat in the passenger seat of the car and told the officer that she was a million-dollar hoe and offered her services for $40.
Because that makes sense.
Yeah. So how does that add up? So she's going to be in that car a long time to make $1 million, huh? Anyway, she was arrested.
Undressed.
She was undressed and arrested. Yeah. So that's the breaking news that I have to offer here. You're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, by the way, and we love that you're doing that. And if you're ever in this part of town, Southern California, we're perched right on the Los Angeles Harbor, the beautiful harbor, and we can look out our window and see the boats go by. And the fish jump out of the water every now and then, and then they are tragically captured by seabirds and ripped to shreds. And then the pieces that fall out, then a seal will jump out of the water and chew on the head, and there's blood everywhere.
It's beautiful. It's quite the ecosystem here.
I love this place.
Yes, and then a T-Rex runs by slowly.
No.
Slowly.
Throws you in the pit.
Yeah. So, but if you are around here, you could see the inner workings of the harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht every day of the week, several times a day. And because Spirit Cruises yachts take off just footsteps away from our studio. So if you have a company outing, a large party, maybe a wedding reception, a reunion, think of all the opportunities. Maybe it's just you and your partner and you want a perfect setting for a romantic evening out on the water at night. Spirit Cruises, they'll feed you. They've got drinks and music and dancing, whatever it is that you want on their yachts. Here's what you do. You call up their phone number, 310-548-8080, or you visit their website, spiritmarine.com, and you set things up because you need to do this. I've done it a couple of times. Mike Stark, our executive producer, has gone a bunch of times. And I swear we're going to set up a company outing for our company right here and get everybody out on the water one of these days and get stinking drunk and see who falls off first.
Probably
can't wait.
Be me.
Can I come back for that, please?
Yes, of course. We'll invite everybody who's ever been involved in the show.
Fantastic.
Who was willing to admit it for a free meal. All right. So as we steam into the last quarter hour of episode 326, part two of Phil Hewlett and Friends with Mike Templeton and Brooke Peterson here in the studio, and intern Ricky's here as well. Let's move on with our stories here because we want to just jam through a bunch of them. The whole idea of quick travel in it gets me excited. The technology, especially what Elon Musk has suggested, originally for Southern California as and Northern California, for that matter, as an alternative to the bullet train that Governor Jerry Brown wants to build that's going to cost $100 trillion.
And never be finished.
And never be finished. Happen. And it won't even be fast in many parts of it. And right now they only plan to take you from Los Angeles to like Bakersfield. Where it was supposed to be Los Angeles to San Francisco in an hour.
Yeah.
But that'll
I'm
never
sad
happen.
To say I voted for that.
But Elon Musk.
I was young.
Yeah, you were faked out like everybody else was.
Thanks, Mike.
Elon Musk has this idea called the Hyperloop. And I want to get inside this thing. And it's like you're at the Costco and they send the little tube full of checks into the tube and it goes.
Yeah.
And it immediately goes up to the accountants.
Well, I remember that being a little girl, and that was how banking was done. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be in my mom's car, and they'd have the little tubes, and they'd put it in the little tray thing in the drawer, and then it sucked over, and you can see it sort of land inside with the woman. And
so the technology's tried and tested on that level, but putting humans inside a capsule and sending them from Los Angeles to San Francisco in 45 minutes is another thing. And finding the right of way to build the track in which this would travel is probably the most difficult part. However, Elon Musk, undaunted, is looking for a way to start this somewhere. And there's an update. There's some news, Brooke. And why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, he has just had his first successful run using the new technology that, once all put together, could equate to this big line of track from, well, not track, it's like tubing from Washington to New York. And so that would include the propulsion system, braking, levitation, and vacuum systems, because you have a sled, which is basically like a bus inside this tube that is floating, it's levitating, and then being sucked at rates. They're wanting to get to 250 miles an hour. That's their next goal. Ultimately, I think they wanted to be like 700 miles an hour.
Yeah, I want to travel that fast when not in an
airplane.
Cool.
Well, this time it got up to 70 miles an hour in just over 5 seconds.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's still really fast, but their next goal is 250. And so everything that is going to add up to this whole project is working. They just have to do it on a bigger grand
scale. Now, I saw the headline. It said that he got the verbal okay for a New York to D.C. Hyperloop.
Yeah, he did say that.
And so,
but it's verbal. We can't prove it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. You know,
I'd like to see him build it.
Well,
I want the one in California because I'll ride that every day of the week.
He's got ADD.
I'll get a job in San Francisco and live in Los Angeles if I can ride the Hyperloop.
Sounds great.
Like, I would love to just go get lunch in San Francisco.
Yes.
That would be great.
I
traveled for 3 years and I had to do the bus thing to Bakersfield and then to Fresno.
How long does that take?
Oh, it takes a long time. Just to get to Martinez, it took almost 7 hours.
There's a place called Martinez?
It's up by San Francisco. Yeah, it takes about 7 hours, give or take, if not more, because you're in a train.
No,
they stop
you.
All the time. Yeah, I know, right? For 3 years.
Well, I've always been amazed at how really travel has not changed that much since, you know, the 50s with airlines and that kind of thing. There hasn't really been any major travel advancement. And so
we don't go faster. Yeah, like we don't. It's essentially the
same. It's gotten worse, actually.
It's gotten, a lot slower.
When I was like 10, 11 years old, I had a dream, and then I wrote it down with crayons about what I thought future travel would be. That you would walk into your garage, and there would be a door in the floor of your garage. And before going into the garage, you would type into some kind of machine. I didn't know what computers
were. You need to talk to Elon.
You would type into a machine your coordinates where you were going.
Yes.
The door would open up. You'd get inside your little capsule, strap in, and the capsule would take you to where you were going to go because there would be this. What I didn't figure out was the infrastructure required.
To get you wherever it is that you're
going to drop the funding.
Autonomous vehicle. You're ahead of your time, Phil.
But all underground.
Ooh! Elon would love that.
Like no cars.
Like Subway. Awesome.
No cars on top. Just,
Did you guys ever watch Futurama when it was on TV?
I never really got into it.
Okay. But people did,
I know.
But they essentially have like hyperloops in the future, and it's just, the person just steps into a tube and it's more like the banking check thing.
Yeah.
So, and then the tube just automatically knows where you go and it changes lanes for you. Like if you have to make a left on 7th, it makes the left for
That's
you.
That's great.
But see if we could get there.
But how does that actually work?
I mean,
Elon has so many projects
Elon
going on right
it out.
Now, though.
This is why we have smart guys.
Yeah.
We need smart guys.
We had a smart guy on the show.
Yep.
With a great voice.
Digging up bones. And I don't know why I didn't see the connection with this. We should have gone to this right away. I mean, there's been in the news a big deal of digging up bones. And see if you make the connection.
Did you make the connection?
Yes, I did.
That was a clever segue.
Nice.
So, we have had, how often do you think people are exhumed from their graves? This doesn't happen very often, right?
Usually when there's paternity or
something,
some kind of dispute about an estate.
Murder, crime.
Yeah.
Anything legal.
Well, lately, I don't know how much you guys are into art, but have you ever heard of Salvador Dali?
Well, of course. Who hasn't heard of Salvador Dali?
Well, he's just been resurrected from his tomb. And for what you just mentioned, there's this woman who claims that she is his daughter. And there is no other way to prove it other than jigging him back up and taking some biomaterial, which they apparently have done. They don't have results yet. But she says that her mother and he dated in the 50s, and she was born in 56, and her grandmother said he's her father, and who knows what the truth is, but he has no other children and a whole bunch of money, I'm sure, in some estate that was given to Spain. And I'm sure she wants a little piece of it if she can.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's Dali's daughter. That's, you know, that's pretty freaking cool.
Sure. And somebody might buy some kind of surrealist paint thing in a painting at a garage sale for $5. And it turns out to be a Dali. And they take it to, the auction house. And it goes for $6 million.
And then she gets
a piece of that.
Yeah.
So, or all of it. You never know.
But it's pretty extreme to dig somebody up from a grave. He died in 89.
Here's what I found, and hipsters will be thrilled about this.
Oh, yeah.
Millennial hipsters will be thrilled. When they exhumed, because the exhumation has already occurred, when they exhumed his body, his famous 10 and 10 mustache, I forgot what they called it, is completely intact. You know, he's just,
like, he's just gone, but there's just this mustache sitting there.
He's a sack of decay, but the mustache is completely intact.
That's crazy.
Whatever
That's
wax
awesome,
he uses,
though.
they need to, like,
yeah,
they need
you
to,
need
to like,
bottle
bank on that.
Essence of Dali wax.
Right? Am I right, Mike? All the hipsters, the kids these days, they're waxing up their mustaches, right?
It's full beards now.
That's true.
Yeah, it's more.
But I'm seeing more of the mustaches where they curl up.
Yeah.
They still really do, yeah. But that's more of an L.A. thing.
But is that Dali? Is that what Dali had?
Well,
Dali had a mustache.
Two big handlebars that came up. And imagine 10 o'clock on the clock.
Yeah.
So each side would essentially...
10 and 2.
10, I mean, 10 and 2, yeah.
Basically any hipster bar you go to in L.A. is going to have a...
Yeah, I've seen several lately.
10 and 2, that's what it was called.
Well, it's 10 and 10, too. Like 10 minutes past and then 10.
Or 10 and 10.
Either way,
10 o'clock
right,
and
though.
10 past.
Absolutely.
I think it was called the 10 and 10.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was Dali's mustache. I got confused there.
That apparently will not die.
Yeah.
So that's
really
the important thing to know there. 88% of us have creeped an ex's Facebook page after a breakup.
Guilty.
Really? Like, why?
Yeah. Well, it's because people have broken hearts.
To see how much better I'm doing.
That's a good answer, Mike. Good answer.
This means stalking your ex is totally normal on Facebook. The study reveals 88% of us, of spurned lovers, track our exes on Facebook. 31% of respondents have changed their profile picture in an attempt to make their exes jealous.
Specifically, okay. Wow. Yeah.
74% said that they looked up an ex's new partner.
Oh, yeah.
70% said that they used their friends' Facebook accounts to look up their exes.
Yeah, dodge.
That's weird. 52% of people unfriended their exes following the breakup.
Yeah. I mean, wait, no.
It depends.
I'm still friends with mine.
Yeah, yeah. Likewise.
And having friends...
We're good people.
Having friends is expensive.
It's kind of a thing, yeah.
You spend a lot of money. 19% of us say we'll spend $500 or more on gifts for our friends throughout the year. $500. Now, I don't know if that's per friend or total on all your friends.
Jesus, I'm cheap.
All right, that's probably. Yeah, that's probably.
I give really
total.
Good hugs. I'm a really good hugger. Hug.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, and let's see. What else do I want to hit out of my stack here? It's such a lovely stack. We did the brownies, lady. Right? We did the brownies. Yeah. We did the rats from the ceiling and Chipotle. Go back to the part one of this episode and listen to that. That's worth listening to. Let's see. 1, 2, 3. A family pet was put down by mistake. Oh,
that's awful.
I would die.
It happened in South.
I would die too.
Columbia, South Carolina.
That's where I'm from.
Yeah.
Are there any names? I might know them.
Well, Jeff Stahl and Abby Frotten.
No.
They're German Shepherd Tyson.
Oh my gosh, that is really. I mean, that would be absolutely devastating. Horrible.
the dog saved his life a couple of times.
I was going to say, she's probably really fraughten.
According to Jeff, the dog fraughten with grief.
How old was the dog, does it say?
Well, they had the dog for 4 years, and Jeff Stahl has seizures, and the dog saved his life a couple of times.
Wow, that's even worse.
Oh, my God.
The couple's deciding whether they're going to take legal action.
So they took the dog to the vet, and they was like a, yeah. it was like a mislabeling
yeah.
or something?
Yes, exactly. Like,
hey, oh, man, biggest, they're going down.
I know. Biggest concert tour of the year. Any ideas? Want to make a guess? Most lucrative concert tour of the year so far.
So far or to project?
So far.
So who announced that they're ending their tour this year? Because that's probably going to be the biggest.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh.
What do you think?
I have no idea.
All right. Well, let me start from the back. I have the top five. And this is surprising to me. Grossing so far, $68.25 million. Depeche Mode.
I had no
Good
idea they're still playing.
Yeah,
that's number five. Number four, coming in with $88 million, is Metallica.
Wow, so still got it.
We're steeped in the 80s right now.
Yeah.
Number three, it wasn't born in the 80s, Justin Bieber.
I was the first person I thought of.
$93.2 million. And he might be doing better if not for being banned completely from performing in China.
Nice.
U2 is second on the list.
That was my other thought.
Raking in $118 million.
I cannot believe that one.
And
not a YouTube fan.
And the number one, and I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Number one on the list with $151 million and change for the first half of the year is Guns N' Roses.
Wow.
Even though
he probably
see that
won't
one.
Show up half the concerts, he always cancels at the very last second.
Yeah, exactly.
He's having issues.
That's the Not In This Lifetime tour. It's only been in Asia and Europe so far, and the group's going to hit the U.S. later this month.
That could be
fun.
That
actually might be worth seeing.
I have to say, though, so I live in Pasadena, and the Rose Bowl is not too far away, and U2 is playing there, and I could hear them from my patio. It was super
cool.
Concert. A huge U2 fan either, but that was really cool to just hear that happening.
Do you hear stuff that you'd rather not hear coming out of the
I've never heard of anything other than that one particular night, that concert. It must have just been like epic.
Wow.
It was so cool.
How about that?
Yeah, it was neat.
Hey, everybody, go to PhilHewlettAndFriends.com, will you? Look for the little green button and subscribe to the program so that you never miss a show. And you can go back and listen to some of the older ones because, frankly, this one sucked. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. Well, then, I'm out of here.
There was way too much intern Ricky in my taste.
I get that a lot.
Mike Stark has his hand up. Yes, he agrees. No, seriously, this was a great show, and we thank you for listening. And thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, who will cease to be our producer starting in a couple of days.
Aww.
But will always be our, what's the word? Honorary producer.
Yay! I'll
For
take
Mike
it.
Templeton, Brooke, and intern Ricky, I'm Phil. Hey. Talk to you next time.
Thanks,
I'm Phil Hewlett and Friends.